everyone. Welcome to the Latin Excellence Podcast. I'm Gabby.
And this is Carlos.
And we are Los Riveras. Our show features stories of top performers in the Latinx community and helps you discover practical insights that you can apply to your own personal journey.
De lunes a viernes se trabaja y el sábado y domingo también. This is the motto that would drive Kenny Salas and his twin brother, Sean, to build a successful company dedicated to Latinx entrepreneurs. At just 12 years old, Kenny and his family uprooted their lives in the U.S. and moved to Sinaloa, Mexico, where he would live with his family until his return to the U.S. After moving back to the States, he went on to attend college at not only UC Berkeley, but also Harvard Business School. In this episode, we chat with Kenny Salas, co-founder and COO of a financial institution called Camino Financial. As a data-driven platform, Camino Financial focuses on offering microloans to Latinx businesses, and they have recently closed an $8 million Series A funding round to continue their support to small businesses across the country.
All right, so thanks again for joining us. Today we have the pleasure of speaking with Kenny. He is one of the co-founders of Camino Financial. So Kenny, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on with you, Carlos. And it's an honor to be part of, this great mission that you have with the podcast.
Thank you, I appreciate that. So first and foremost, I guess we can't, we have to acknowledge the elephant in the room that, you know, right now we are going through a global pandemic and we're seeing the economy just change right in front of us. So maybe for those people who don't know about your organization, maybe can you talk to us a little bit about what Camino Financial is and then maybe kind of dive into a little bit of how you guys are currently helping small businesses and individuals during this crisis?
Yeah, happy to mention that. Camino Financial is a financial technology firm. We're based in Los Angeles and we offer microloans to businesses. What differentiates us is we focus on immigrant communities, primarily the Latinx community, which we call now the new mainstream economy, because really with this growing demographic and their participation in the labor force and the small business force, it's very important for financial institutions and especially those that are tech enabled like Camino Financial to serve this market in the best way possible. And that's pretty much what we do.
So let's start with how you started the business. So you and your twin brother, Sean, started working on the concept for your company during your time at Harvard, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Sean and I have locked hand in hand, I guess technically since the day we were born. I would say before we came up with the concept of Camino Financial, I would say that there was a very important experience in our childhood that has made us very passionate about serving the Latinx community for a very long time. And so Sean and I are two of six children, and my mother, who's an immigrant from Jalisco, Mexico, she opened a taco stand and in her early 30s, and ultimately that taco stand was the first of a local chain of Mexican restaurants, and she opened over 25 restaurants in about 30 years. And so she dedicated her life to this business, and she did it for the most part being a single mother and didn't have a college education. And like many immigrants, really just had that spirit of building a legacy for her family. Unfortunately, this story did turn south. And at one point that this business just became a little too much for her to manage. And she decided to just throw in the towel. And she really ended up just started within a very short time frame. She wound down the business and she decided, look, I'm gonna move back to Mexico, and I'm gonna take my two youngest children with me, and that was Sean and I. So we actually grew up in Mazatlán, Sinaloa, from 12 to 20, and wow. And that was a really big change for us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because, I mean, at that point, we didn't really even know how to speak Spanish that well. And my mother remarried and my stepfather didn't even know how to speak English. And really just be our lives completely changed. I mean, we lived in a very affluent neighborhood in the suburbs of LA. And then we kind of moved to Mazatlan and lived a more modest life. So I think taking a step back and kind of fast forward back to Harvard, I mean, I think I just realized like our mother just had so much potential, so much drive, and yet she wasn't able to sustain that business. And so that's what has really fueled us to build the community and collaborate with the Latino community so that no business gets left behind and they have the resources they need outside of capital to scale. And so that's where kind of Camino Financial, that the inspiration came, and we took advantage of the resources that we were able to get at Harvard Business School to effectively incubate this startup and speak with other very successful entrepreneurs, right? And really kind of just trade ideas on how to refine the business model so that we can scale this company. And I'm really happy to say that what really started as a broker, as a marketplace for Latino business owners, evolved into us becoming a direct lender and serving thousands and thousands of Latino business owners in the United States.
Let me take a pause there, because there's a few things, right, where you kind of grew up now just kind of eating a lot of Mexican food, which I could imagine was just pretty tasty if it was such a big kind of 25 restaurants. And then you moved over to Mazatlan, you kind of learned Spanish to kind of help you. But then you went to Harvard, and then you started an incubator, or maybe not an incubator, but you started this while you're at school. So maybe talk to us a little bit about that, because there's so many people, even like in my master's class and Gabby's class, where you're working on these projects. And then you later find out like, wait a second, I actually have something here. So what was that like for you guys?
It's a very humbling experience. I mean, starting a business is when you have the idea and you put together your first kind of plan, it's only the first draft. And I think the benefit of, at least the benefit we had when we started it at a business school is immediately you have this network of students, your peers, and of alumni that you can call. And especially while you're going to school, that network is very accessible. It's kind of one of those rule of thumbs for most business schools is when you reach out to somebody, and they can be the CEO of one of the largest financial technology companies in the United States. In fact, one of them was. They'll take your call and they'll give you their thoughts on your business model. And so, especially our second year, we just had a lot of flexibility to even get course credit on it. So we were able to spend, I mean, I would say I spent probably at least 50% of my time on the business while I was going to school as well. And it was just great to kind of, you know, to be able to do that and just get a great education at the same time.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. And I do think that's the draw of many business schools, is that network, because you can leverage it throughout, you know, the rest of your professional life. So I'm curious about how, you know, for those that maybe haven't gone to school or are thinking about attending college or maybe just going straight into entrepreneurship, how would you say that, you know, aside from the networking piece, how has your education helped you grow the business?
My education, well, I mean, I kind of always like to think of education in three parts. I think there's education you learn at home with your family, usually typically your parents or just some very close mentors. I mean, the second place is school, of course, and I got my bachelor's at Berkeley, and then in my master's at Harvard. And then the third one is travel. And I think these three things really helped me. And as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Sean and I, when we were 12, moved to Mexico, and that just gave us a tremendous amount of perspective. And we also still realize how lucky we were. And my father would always tell us, is de lunes a viernes se trabaja y el sábado y domingo también. So yeah. For all our English speaking audience, I mean, that means from Monday to Friday you work, and Saturday and Sunday as well. Yeah. And I think one of the things that drove that point home is I would go to the grocery store, and you had a child of 8 years old, 10 years old, bagging groceries. And my father used to always tell me, he's like, Kenny, you guys are lucky enough that you don't need to do this, but your job is to be productive at school and keep yourself busy. And so I think that's just one lesson of both family, what you can learn at home from, in this case, my stepfather, but I refer to him as my father, and just the perspective of living in another country. I think in terms of my formal education at Berkeley and at Harvard, I mean, just going to school and being completely independent, and of course, a lot of these courses are graded on a curve. I think that healthy competition is very helpful, and it pushes you and incentivizes you to learn a lot of great things. I mean, I think the power of communication is important. I mean, I'd say that when I went to Berkeley, my English writing didn't meet college level, and I actually took an intense college writing course, and I came out of it I consider myself a fairly good writer, and so communication, of course, at Harvard, the case study method is a very practical way to just ask critical questions about, you know, cases that can happen to you. And one of the courses that I particularly liked was this course called Founder's Dilemma. And it goes through cases in which you realize that there's a lot of founders that don't necessarily scale to become the CEOs of the company that goes public. Mm-hmm. And there's so many examples of that. And I think by studying those cases and understanding, what prevented or what kept those founders from kind of scaling with that business, I think are important things that I take into mind. And I think the benefit that Sean and I have is it's not only knowing the knowledge, but sometimes business can be an emotional journey. And sometimes, as much as we want to be self-aware, it's hard to be self-aware. And I think one of the biggest competitive advantages that both Sean and I have is we are literally physically and mentally we're clones, right? And so we hold ourselves accountable.
But you're absolutely right. I think communication is huge, right? Like, there's so many times just the way that you speak allows you to kind of work with so many different people, and just by the tone of your language, the way that you say certain words, and sometimes you can only get that through education. But maybe so you started this company with your brother, and so it's essentially almost kind of like a family business, right? So we wanted to dive in a little bit more about, you know, just talk to us a little bit more about the family dynamics of working with family. I can imagine that there's sometimes you have different conflicting ideas. So just want to get a sense of perspective and maybe kind of how you and your brother kind of work through those different challenges to keep the business running.
Oh, great question. Happy to discuss it. And before I get into it, I will tell you that our first salaried employee at Camino Financial was my older sister, Yvette Salas.
Wow, so nice.
Yes. So for pretty much the first year, there was four people that started this company. That was Sean and I, my sister Yvette, and my partner, who's still with us today, is Tariq Al-Sheikh, who's our chief credit officer. And so we pretty much built this company from the ground up for that first year. And just to illustrate kind of how family oriented we were, is I graduated in May 2015, and Sean and I moved to back to LA, and that's where my family and where I was born, and that's where we're from. And our office, and Tariq, we convinced Tariq to move to LA and move his pregnant wife to LA as well, and that's a separate story. And guess what? We all sat, our first office was the dining room table. And it was my sister, Sean, me, and Tariq. And I'm sure that was a little intimidating for Tariq as well, just because there's three Salises at one table. Now, specifically with Sean, it was definitely a learning curve. I'm not going to lie. When you're starting a company, I mean, first of all, those first days at the dining room table in Eagle Rock, California, we struggled not to have brainstorming sessions every 30 minutes. Okay. Nice. as much as we incubated this business at Harvard, those first 18 months, 24 months, you're still trying to figure out what you're trying to do. And I'll tell you, it took us, I believe, at least 12 months to close our first 10 loans. Okay.
Wow.
10 loans. It took us 12 months to do that.
So were you doing this in Harvard, or this was already back after you graduated, right?
No, this was while we were at Harvard. And even after we graduated, and it still took us about, from the when we started the business in the summer of 2014, took us about a year to close our first 10 loans. And so I tell you this because there's no real structure, there's no defined roles. And so when you have two twin brothers that have done everything together and in many ways have this similar skill sets, guess what? When there's not clear roles, you have a tendency to, first of all, step on each other's feet, right? That's number one. And then you have a tendency to not filter your feedback and emotions, which typically happens when you're talking to somebody that you've only met 2 years ago at business school, right? So I'd say the combination of those two things make it a little complicated. And it got to a point where for one of our annual reviews, I wrote Sean a very deep letter of how I felt. And I'm happy to report that he read it very carefully. And then he also wrote me a letter. And I think that was the beginning of a great growth process in which we would respect each other more, still during these jungle years, right? Because it takes time. But now we're in an extremely great place where we continue to have a very good personal relationship. But during the job, we have very, very clear roles, and that helps us a lot. But before we define those roles, you need to establish the norms of communication and respect. And I think that's something we defined very early on. So that's the takeaway, right? Define those norms, and those norms may be very different than the norms you grew up with.
And you see that, you see those dynamics in play at a company, right? At any organization where you need to establish clear roles, you need a clear vision for people to follow. But I think that idea is even more prevalent in family businesses, to your point, because you grew up with this person, you know them the best in this world. So it's even more important because there's definitely room for misinterpretation or miscommunication. I wonder, as we think about your partnership and maybe what this looks like in a company, how do you hold each other accountable? So you've established the clear roles and responsibilities, but you know, what is that level of just pushing each other and holding each other accountable to those goals?
Well, I mean, I'd say that's where we're not going to operate that much different than a lot of very well run companies. I mean, before we started Camino Financial, Sean and I worked on Wall Street for 5 years. So I worked in investment bank. We pretty much more or less, we both worked 2 or 3 years in investment banking, and we both worked about 2 to 3 years in private equity. And so specifically when I worked in private equity, as an investor in a mid-sized company, mid-sized defined as a business that makes about $20 million in EBITDA, which is cash, a proxy of cash flow for a company, you need to have standardized reporting, and you need to understand, you need to have a very standardized process of setting goals, right? Of establishing your budget. And so a lot of that discipline really was transposed to or transferred to Camino Financial very early on. So I think from that standpoint, we were able to just kind of, whether the goal is right or wrong, you kind of just got to shoot for something and then recalibrate, right? Based on context, right? Based on, on what you learned. Yeah. And so I think from that standpoint, that wasn't that much of a struggle. But again, I give you the context just so you know, like we're pretty data driven, and we love numbers. So yeah. So I think that was a little easier for us.
Sure.
Yeah, I was a finance major in college. I went to Loyola Chicago, and then I got my master's degree at Columbia. So a little rivalry there between me and Harvard, but we'll talk about that another day. But maybe let's switch gears for a little bit. So what do you think, and let's talk about a little bit more about now Camino Financial. So what do you think kind of really separates Camino Financial with the rest of the other big banks? There's so much competition, but obviously you guys have grown, and just recently I saw you had a big investment from a different company or bank. So what separates you guys from the rest of the pack?
I think what differentiates Camino Financial is, I mean, let me first just tell you who we're serving, okay? 90%+ of our customers are Latino. The grand majority of them prefer to speak Spanish. So they're primarily a first generation Latinx immigrants, yeah. Right? The 25% of them don't even have a credit score. Okay. Wow. And then about 50% of them, believe it or not, are undocumented. They only have a tax identification number. They do not have a social security number. So, I mean, I think I can tell you that already, especially the last two data points I shared with you, would scare even a lot of these alternative lenders away that I mentioned. And because, as you guys can imagine, on the profile of the business owner that we're offering, you can imagine that it's mainly cash-based businesses.
Right,
and
yeah.
So,
exactly. I'm thinking here now, like, okay, if somebody were to come up to me on the street and say, hey, look, I don't have any, obviously we want to help everyone, but I don't have any papers, I'm here, I don't speak English, how am I going to do it? Seems like this could be like pretty high risk capital investment, right?
Exactly. And in fact, these businesses have gotten loans forever. I mean, even my mother's business back in the day, right, were able to get loans. But these were mainly loans offered by local private lenders that, the rates were, and it's not only the interest rate, but the terms of the loan were pretty taxing on the business owner and put a lot of risk for the business owner when they took that capital. And so, we knew that Camino had a place in this financial technology world, because when we started as a marketplace, which really is an online broker, right? And we just, our chief credit officer, Tariq Al-Sheikh, was like, I would give this person this loan at a lower rate, and I have 10 years of experience and credit. And so that, you know, that I, that statement really ended up turning into, you know, us developing an expertise to understand this market very well from a credit perspective, and to build a product, a financial product that met their needs. And of course, also managed our risk, you know, given that the fact that it's still an unsecured loan. And that ultimately has translated into giving them a loan between 2 and 5 years with monthly payments. And the alternative is typically paying on a daily or weekly basis. And then the average term of those loans is 12 months. And believe it or not, typically when they get a loan from those lenders, it's higher than what we get. So our average loan size is $15,000. The average loan size of other lenders typically is a little over like $20,000-$25,000. And what ends up happening is shorter term, higher loan amount, shorter time to pay it, and more frequency to pay it. We understand this market well, and we think that there's that they run a lot of risk of getting that fast capital.
Right. And Kenny, you all are providing such a critical service. I'm curious about how this, you know, how your service is related to the growth of Latinx businesses, right? So we know that Latinx owned businesses are growing year after year. And like you just mentioned, they're still having trouble securing business loans because of, you know, limited credit histories or other factors. From your perspective as the expert, what do you think are some best practices that you can offer small business owners to help set them up for success as they look to launch their new ventures?
I guess it depends if you're speaking to somebody that wants to start a small business or wants to, you know, start their new tech startup and grow a, you know, $1 billion company. But I think overall, the guidance I would give is, first off, if as you embark on this entrepreneurial journey, I think it's very important that you find your rock to support you in the ups and downs. And it doesn't matter if you run a restaurant with one or two stores or you run a startup that is growing 20-30% month over month. I mean, you're going to have ups and downs. It's not really a lifestyle business. and I think you're going to have to make a lot of tough decisions. And so it's important that you find somebody that will support you and give you the right advice. I think two, it's when you're considering a business partner, I'd heavily weigh the fact that you can trust them. So their trustworthiness, their ability to be coachable, and also their humility. I've seen a lot of great partnerships, and I think at Camino Financial, as I mentioned to you, Yvette and Tarek are still at our company, and along the way we brought in three other executives, and we've all been working with each other on average for about 4 years. So we all, pretty much all of us have been working, the executive team has been together for a long time, and I will tell you that we've all been on the, I don't know if I can curse here, but we've all been on the shit list at one point, and we've all messed up. And I think the one of the great things about our team is I think, first of all, it's testament to my brother Sean's leadership and working with people. But it's also testament to themselves of being open to that feedback and having the will to grow. And I'd say the third thing that I would give in terms of tangible advice to future Latinx business owners and entrepreneurs is, you know, the people part of the business equation is extremely important. It's not only the executive team, but it goes from all the way to the bottom and all the way to the top. And so as soon as you can, I would consider adding an HR component to your business very early on. And that doesn't mean you have to hire an HR specialist day one. You can find creative ways of of adopting HR best practices. I mean, you can literally even contract it out. There's a lot of companies out there that offer a lot of the HR service. And then eventually, hopefully, you can actually hire an HR person, because that's going to drive the culture of your company. That's just going to make sure you're hiring the right people. I mean,
I definitely agree with you there. I'm a bit biased because I am an HR person. So definitely agree with you there, Kenny.
That's for sure.
And so, yeah, and I'm not just saying this, Gabby, because you're in HR, but I really believe that. I really, really believe that you have to, because it's an art and it's a science, and bringing somebody with experience that can help you navigate through those testy waters I think can really help a company scale.
Yeah. So one question that we did have for you, Kenny, is, so what you guys are offering is great. So why don't you think that more of our people of our community, Latinos, why don't you think they apply more for loans? What do you think might be stopping them? Or what are you seeing that there's a hesitation to want to continue to grow? My dad had his own pool service company. We knew people who had their own landscaping company, but we don't see it to a point where, we don't always see it to a point where they grow that landscaping business. So what do you think might be stopping some people, or there's hesitation from our community to apply for those loans?
Yeah. I mean, I think he kind of mentioned one interesting thing about your father, right? Growth is risky too. Right. And sometimes when you depend on your business to put food on the table for Carlos, right? Young Carlos, that's a very risky move. And I think, of course, I mean, while, you know, any lender is always going to assume some type of default rate, right? That's mm-hmm. any lender, and even the most risk adverse lenders out there, right? Like banks. So I think it's one of those things that family owned businesses, Latino owned businesses, which are typically owned and run by the family. I mean, I think that is part of the equation, because here's an insight, right? I mean, if most of our like over 50% of our customers have only an ITIN, and the reason why they have a small business is it's really the only way for them not to spend, you know, their career washing cars and in the back of a kitchen, right? It's their opportunity to really build something for their kids and offer a little bit more. And so I think that's why I love this market, not only because it hits home personally, but because they depend on it. They want to ensure they are in good standing with all of their partners, not only their lending partners. So I think that's my way of answering your question. It's so much is at stake, and you may not have a safety net that probably falls into your calculation, and it weighs heavily on it. I've read a lot of studies, and the reality is Latinos do apply for loans, and they don't necessarily under index on searching for the capital. I think what ends up happening is they don't qualify, and so I think a lot of this is also our fault, right? Let's kind of touch on something very current right now. I mean, the SBA, came out with two loan programs, right? And one of those programs is the PPP, right? It's the Payroll Protection Program, right? And so that loan, this relief program, is really designed for being able to pay employees, right? But it's also very strict on how you calculate that payroll. And if you're paying your employees cash, mm-hmm. if you're 1099-ing your employees, you're not going to be eligible for this loan. And right. so I think this is why a lot of small businesses are also just and I want to call it micro businesses, because small businesses, as you guys learned, that apparently Shake Shack was a small business and got money, right? And you guys are starting to get a sense. I mean, this is bringing into light a lot of these controversial things of how do you define a small business that doesn't sound small.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to go as far as say micro businesses, these businesses that don't have, you know, a CFO. And so some of that is, you know, them kind of cutting corners and saving some money. And then also some of that is ignorance. And so I do see this crisis, and this is, you know, we're going through the COVID-19 shutdown right now, as I think as a wake-up call for a lot of business owners. And I actually generally believe that this may change behaviors for the good. And I think that's the silver lining I'll give you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think that piece on education is key. Curious, does your company provide like financial resources and education for either immigrants or just folks that want to know more?
Absolutely. So I'm very proud that we have on Camino Financial, and if you click on business resources, and I just counted it, we have just shy of about 1,000 unique pieces of content on that blog. And all that content is in English and in Spanish. Okay. And so I believe this makes us the largest blog in bilingual blog for targeting small businesses in the United States. And so because you can even go to the SBA and they do not have as much content as we have. So since the beginning, if you guys find another blog that is over us, please send me the link. I want to learn from them. I say that not in like a super bad competitive way. I'd love to know, and so that I don't misspeak. Very early on, we started our email newsletter. I mean, pretty much. And so, you know, we've constantly been engaging with our business owners, and it started as one newsletter, and now we're segmenting it by industry, right? And by stage of business. And so we're doing our best to continue to give as much custom content that we can. And right now, we're very active because we know that a lot of our existing customers and our followers are very thirsty for content related to COVID relief and how to adapt their businesses in this new normal, in this masked economy. So that's something we're very focused on right now.
Great.
Now, this is good. And you know, a lot of people just sometimes they don't know where to find that information. So it's good that you guys are at least providing that information out there to the public so that they can easily find it and make it accessible. Yeah. So maybe shifting gears a little bit now, we want to talk a little bit about, you know, just kind of who you are. So how do you think being Latino has kind of helped influence, obviously you're, you know, being Latino is a lot of your market is from the Latino community, but maybe from your perspective, you yourself, how do you stay authentic? How do you think you're being who you are as a Latino helped you in your career?
I have to say I had the best example with my mother, and my mother also grew up, you know, in the United States where it wasn't that cool to be Latino. I think we're fortunate. I mean, I think the three of us are probably the same and within the same generation where it's kind of cooler to be Latino. So it's easier to maintain your identity. Because, you know, at least when I was a teenager, Ricky Martin, Shakira, and then overall just a lot of Latino influences were out there in pop culture. Regardless, I mean, I love that my mother, full disclosure. So we lived in this area called Hidden Hills. So my mom was very successful. So she bought a house in Hidden Hills. We were literally the only Latino family there. Okay. Wow. And I love it because my mom would throw these huge posadas and invite all the neighbors.
Oh,
and
they'd awesome.
Love it. I mean, my godparents are Italian Americans, and he's,
you know, he's a retired doctor now, and they still come to all the family parties. So, I mean, I think very early on, we learned to be very proud of our culture, and ultimately just surrounded ourselves with amazing people that were, that responded really well to it. Mm-hmm. And so that never made me feel like I had to hide my identity. Now, in terms of like being Latino and how that's influenced, you know, how my leadership style and how I manage the business, I put it in 3 points. So one is, in many ways, and not only by observing my mother, but in many ways, being an immigrant myself, right? Re-immigrating to the United States. I mean, the immigrant spirit is just, I mean, there is a very strong sense of entrepreneurship, which really fuels your work ethic. And I'm just so grateful that that comes natural to me. Like, that doesn't come natural to everybody. It doesn't. Yeah. And I think, you know, we got to tell people in the White House, right, that that's not natural for everybody. And you still need immigrants because they really do refuel that American dream, and history has told us that time and time again. I mean, so that's one element, of course. Number two is living in Mexico for 8 years has and being a Latino myself has, of course, just given me, you know, given my business and the market we serve, just a lot of insights on our customers, and ultimately is a lot of passion in serving them as well. Because when you're running a business in a startup, and you know, we've been around for almost 6 years now, but you still need to be really excited and passionate about waking up every morning and just cranking, especially like during this quarantine period. Like, I feel like most of us, all we do is just wake up in our pajamas and just start cranking on stuff, right? Yeah, so, of course, being Latino has fueled that passion to serve this market. And I think the third element of it is, you know, once upon a time, I was a minority on Wall Street. So, you know, a lot of the other financial analysts there, you know, were not Latino, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think by being a minority, you learn how to be pretty perceptive of your surroundings, right? Mm-hmm. And you also learn how to adapt as well. And adapting doesn't mean you lose your identity, right? It's just also just understanding how to make other people feel comfortable too, right? It's kind of one of those things that it's an art and a science, and you need to find a balance. It's not one extreme or the other extreme, right? Yeah. And I think that high level of perception as a minority on Wall Street has also enabled me to adapt myself as well in various settings. I mean, across the board, so that's giving me that's really helped me progress in my career.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, because even just going to college, right? Like, we in my college, it was a small university, but I was there was only maybe a handful of Latinos there, and it wasn't a lot. And even I remember I interned at Morgan Stanley, and like you said, I mean, I was the only Latino, working in their office. So it's definitely a shock, but you gotta kind of just have to learn how to adapt and kind of work through it. But also, we want to talk to you, or maybe you can share with us a little bit about what does your daily schedule look like? Because sometimes we think that, oh yeah, you know, coming to financial, they're great, they're doing good things, but a lot of us, sometimes we don't realize the work that goes behind it. And you mentioned it earlier that your dad taught you that, you know, se trabaja lunes a viernes y también se trabaja sábado y domingo, right? So maybe talk to us about your daily routine and kind of what that looks like.
You know, I'm very blessed at this point at Camino Financial. We have about 50
people, more or less, that are working for us. And I'm very proud about that talent because a lot of that talent also is Latino. It's female as well. A lot of Latina professionals and also just very diverse, not necessarily, I mean, I think across our organization, we speak about 7 languages. I mean, just think about our management team. I mean, one of them is Armenian, the other one's Taiwanese. Tariq, he's Egyptian, right, and Muslim. And then it's Sean and me. And then our CFO, he's African-American. I mean, if you look at that management team, I mean, I think we're fairly diverse. And so I say that because I now, you know, actually spend a good amount of my time. I would say 40% of my time is spent in meetings. But, you know, I will say I am my wife once told me, she's like, because I'm so set on my routines. She's like, oh my God, Kenny, if I lived your day to day, I'd be so bored. And I'm just like, you know what? Thanks to my routine, every day at 7:30, I have dinner with you. I mean, rather than going through my day-to-day crazy schedule, I do spend a lot of time in meetings, but all I can tell you is I'm just such a big fan of routines just because it enables you to just make sure that you're productive in any way you define productivity, right? And so that helps me a lot.
Yep, routines are definitely critical. And, you know, I think you all, your team is also a testament to you and Sean and your vision of what you expect for this company, but also the impact that you're having on the community. So we thank you so much for the critical work that you're doing to help serve our community. And really thank you for sharing your story. We want to wrap up with a couple things. So one, we want to know what's next for Camino Financial, what's in the horizon? And then we have some fast 4 questions that we'll ask you at the end.
The future of Camino Financial is for us to be the leading online platform serving the Latinx entrepreneur community and offering them additional financial service and credit products. We have the benefit of being a digitally native company that has a lot of data specific to this market. And what that is going to enable us to do is just offer the most custom solution.
So thank you so much for sharing all of that insight. And I know we're going to see a lot of great things coming out of you and your team. So we look forward to having you back maybe in the future and talk about all about your success in these past few, or these next few years, especially during this critical time. And yes, data is king. So I'm glad to hear that somebody else is using all that information to make things better. So let's start then with our next Fab Four questions then. So name one person you admire or are currently following.
Ray Dalio.
Okay, cool. Let's see. What book are you currently reading?
I don't want to get this title right. So I'm looking at, I just finished reading it. I don't want to. It is Smarter, Faster, Better by Charles Duhigg.
Nice. All right, very cool. And you mentioned one earlier. What is your favorite Spanish quote?
Uno no se hace rico por ganar mucho, pero por gastar poco.
Yes, love it. I love that. And last one, what would you want your younger self to know?
I would say, I mean, and maybe this is something I've always thought, but like, yeah, it's like you regret the risks you don't take. So, I mean, that's the main thing. So take measured risks. Have fun.
Nice. I love it.
That's awesome. Thank you so much again, Kenny. Where can our listeners find you and find more information about your company?
They can find me actually. I do a weekly Facebook Live on the Camino Financial Facebook fan page. So you can have a direct conversation with me if you guys go to Camino Financial Facebook page. And please follow us and even click the button that says See First so that you get all our notifications.
All right. Well, thank you again, Kenny. We really appreciate it. Thank you for your time, and I'm sure we'll be in touch soon. Thank you.